So you had mentioned just now, Dr. Brian, about accessing care for treatment, for example, at Verdon House. That
Yes.
referral must be done through the psychiatric hospital, or it can be done from your private doctor or any other facility.
The referral has to come through the psychiatric hospital. That is an administrative arrangement, really and truly. Remember, we are discussing the Substance Abuse Foundation. It's a private entity, and the government will pay for certain Barbadians who go there. And so, for accounting purposes, then the person sort of they do need to come to the hospital. Let's say that certainly, so that we have an idea certainly of who's there and the circumstances under which they're there, and account for the fact, therefore, that the the persons that run Verdon House and Marina House will be billing the government, and certainly there just obviously needs to be quite a bit of transparency where that is concerned.
In Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean, it's now 28 minutes to the hour of 7. For those of you who just happen to be turning your radios on, you're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. I'm Dr. Renee Boyce. I am your host. And in with me this evening is Dr. Brian McLachlan. He is a consultant psychiatrist at the psychiatric hospital. And we also have Mrs. Betty Hunt. Mrs. Betty Hunt, she's the manager of the NCSA, National Council on Substance Abuse, and we have been learning a bit more about what the council does. So, Betty, my next question is to you. We had heard you mention a little earlier that you do interface with several agencies, and you had alluded to interfacing with the schools. Perhaps a teacher or a head teacher might have noticed behavioral changes, or perhaps a child was found at school to have some contraband, some drugs that he or she should not have had. And notice we are saying he or she. My first error was to give the scenario as only a boy, but let it be known that there are females who are involved in the practice of using drugs, and reports have been showing that the numbers are increasing. So what I want you to talk about would be some of the agencies you interface with. And then after that, you had mentioned some research that has been going on. Perhaps you can just give us an eye into some of that research.
Okay, certainly. So let's start with the first question and some of the agencies that the National Council on Substance Abuse has interfaced with for some period of time. And the first one I'd like to mention is one that Dr. Brian had mentioned, and that is the is CASA. That is an agency which offers outpatient counseling as well. And we find that that has been a great parallel to what the NCSA does because of the hours that it is open. Because we are a government agency, we tend to operate 8:30 to 4:30. CASA operates a lot longer. And for a lot of practical purposes, that has been an institution which we have referred persons to. A lot of the time, I try to think of this whole issue of the impact of drug use in a very practical manner. If somebody, unfortunately, is experiencing problematic substance use, already they're compromised a health issue. But then if you compromise the work issue, if that person especially is a main, a bread earner in the household, that person really cannot take time from a working day to attend counseling or to attend to treatment. So if the facility is available for the person to still be able to work but access treatment without interrupting work or without interrupting, say, a household schedule or so, the person may be the main caregiver in the house. And so that is why I would like to mention CASA. I know that it is going through a period of rebranding, but Dr. Brian can speak to that. He's more closely associated. But when we speak of drug use, we have to look along a continuum. So it is CASA we have been liaising with. We liaise with the Substance Abuse Foundation, both at Verdon House and at Marina House, which is the center they have for females as well. We do some work with probation. We have liaised with welfare, Ministry of Education, whichever agency we have to touch base with to help a client in need, that is where we will go. We're now trying to get some non-traditional agencies on board, so that we are better able to help our clients through whatever it is. Sometimes if a client calls and they present with drug use, by the time you are finished that first session, it is not really the drug use that really is driving the call. It may be homelessness or soon to be homeless. They may be hungry. They may be familial problems. So we have to work through all of that. And that is why it is important. Maybe domestic abuse on the horizon, it may be happening. So we have to work through for each case that presents to us, which is the agency we need to speak with. We may need to engage a Paradox, for example. We may need to engage whatever. So we will do whatever it takes to help the client through the process for as far as we are able to help that client through the process. Quite recently, up to recently, we were also involved on the drug treatment court. That is another initiative, which is an alternative to incarceration. So instead of sending persons to our prisons, if the drug use does not cause, is not resulting in something violent, if it is not drug trafficking, we try to give them treatment outside of the prison. They're still able to function. They're still able to go to work. And it's a very rigid checking in with the court system. It is, after all, a creature of the court. So there's still that monitoring by the court. So we are also involved in the drug treatment court as well. So those are some of the agencies with which we work at present, and we're expanding. And so you also asked about our research.
Yes, your sole research officer, that yeah, one individual that has to do so much.
Our one individual
assistant.
Yes, yes. And I must say they're both highly qualified. We repose a lot of confidence in them. They're responsible for churning out the Barbados Drug Information Network, which is basically local research that are gathered from treatment agencies, from prisons. So CASA contributes Verdon House from our prisons. Edna Nichols Center, that is another agency school type setting, which we do a weekly intervention with as well. So it's a whole range of agencies that contribute to the Barbados Drug Information Network, more commonly known as BARDIN. So we're in the process now of getting out 2019 information. We have all the reports ready and they're all up on our website. If you need to see them, you can just access the website or speak or call the office and we will make those copies available. We've just finished a primary school survey. It is the only one in the Caribbean that has been done. Bermuda did one some years ago. But what we did is we went into the primary schools to find out what are some of the factors that may drive drug abuse at an early age. But we did not only stick to drug abuse. We looked at a lot of other intervening circumstances. And so what they knew about drugs at that age, where the sources of information were, if they were taking drugs, where the sources, how easy it was to access drugs. That information too is readily available. And we did that with our class threes and fours in primary schools. That was released last year, so it is pretty recent. We're also involved with an international body, the Organization of American States, through their Inter-American Drug Abuse Control Commission. With the treatment centers, that is coordinated locally by the NCSA. And so our research assistant, Laura Foster, she has day-to-day responsibility for the collection of information from treatment centers, and that forms part of a Caribbean-wide database. So we're looking at that as well. We are also involved with the multilateral evaluation mechanism, which is something, again, run by the same Inter-American Drug Abuse Control Commission, and that gives you a history, a pattern, drug trends developing among the 34 member states of the OAS. It is currently in its eighth round. It's about to start, and so we are doing that. We've just started with the assistance of United Nations Organization on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, to see what it is that is stopping women from accessing treatment. We know, as you just said, that females use drugs. We know females experience problematic use of drugs. And so we are doing a bit of research called barriers to access to treatment for women. We've just started that. And so that will be another bit of information that is locally generated. And so what we're really trying to do is build a body of local research so that as we go through our policy formulation, as we go through our programming, we are programming for the specific needs of the Barbadian community. Because quite often, sometimes the imported programs really do not match our realities. And we have to be able to switch our programs up, to look at policy issues and be able to tweak them and turn them and make them fit our reality. So that is some of the research in which we are engaged, and it's ongoing. We do research for other agencies as well. We just started some, but it just got put on pause, but we will resume again with that particular bit of research as soon as we can get out of this pause. Just before I go, though, I just wanted to say that when I was on before Dr. Mack, he was speaking about accessing treatment. We will still be open even during this period, as I guess most of the treatment centers are. We will be a phone call away, coming perhaps down to the end of the program. I will give a number where you can still reach us and have that counseling or ear ready for any support that you may wish. And we don't only deal with drug issues. Persons call for other things and we refer. And we refer. If we can, we refer. So I think I'll stop here now. Perhaps.
I have a few more questions for you.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a few more questions for you. But I wanted to ask Dr. McLachlan about alcohol use. We spoke about the fact that alcohol is a legal substance in this country, but it is only above the age of 18. You have to be 18 years or older in order to purchase alcohol. Right, that is correct. We know, however, that is not the case. I happened to be in a gas station and some school-aged children came in and they were trying to purchase alcohol. And I would say kudos to the security guard at that establishment who pointed out to them that they are not allowed to drink alcohol. Mind you, they told him everything that they could think to tell him, but he was adamant. And I thought that was very good, that it shows that there are people in our society who are still willing to speak out about these issues, which are very relevant. But let's go back to the social aspect of alcohol. The fact that alcohol is a legal drug here in Barbados, the pattern of alcohol abuse is mostly on the weekends, the binge drinking, where you finish work and then from Friday evening to Sunday night, you consume as much alcohol as is humanly possible and then rinse yourself out and back to work on Monday. Am I correct?
Wow. You're very much correct, yes. And it's sad to say that that does work for some people for a time, meaning that at the end of work on Friday, yes, so they're drinking all weekend, and then they're back to work on Monday. And, you know, you can do that for a time. As you get older, then your recovery from all of that then gets a little bit harder. Some of that also, remember, especially if it's happening in groups, is a male thing, it's a macho thing, which is how much alcohol can I consume, you know, in the shortest possible time and still be standing and able to tell the tale. And when persons are doing that as well, then they get the sense of, well, I am going to work, I'm otherwise functioning during the week. You know, don't mind they're not spending time with family or children on weekends, perhaps, but there's a sense that, again, it's not quite the same thing as if you are staggering, you know, throwing up all over the road in the gutter and, you know, vagrant-like sort of behavior, really and truly. So, but it's still indicative that obviously there is a problem. One's downtime, so to speak, really should not be spent, you know, consuming that amount of alcohol in that shorter time to the exclusion of doing other things which are, you know, healthy and positive. Yeah.
what are the resources available, apart from the psychiatric hospital, available for relatives and individuals who are managing alcohol abuse?
Well, we talked about some of them already in terms of the NCSA and CASA. There are a couple of persons who have training in drug counseling who are available privately. And, even individual practitioners in the private sector certainly would have had some experience, certainly, in counseling persons. So
do we have an Alcoholics Anonymous available here?
I was just going there. Yes, we do.
Yes, that's where I was going.
That's where I was going as well. So yes, we do. Yes, there's a vibrant, actually, Alcohol Anonymous community, which is now online with COVID. And I think Betty had spoken about, obviously, the whole issue with groups and having groups when we're all supposed to be social distancing. And so you can still do one, provided that, you're adhering to the protocols for when persons are in groups. But you can now access AA online, and I think I have the website. It's aabarbados.org, I think. You can go on that and you will see that they actually have their AA in Zoom format. So there's some open and closed meetings. So you can actually go and have the AA experience, certainly, but have it obviously in a virtual space, and therefore it is much safer. And similarly for Narcotics Anonymous as well, that also exists online as well. So AA has been, and it's been around for quite a long time, and it has really done quite a lot of good work. And so it is good, certainly, that not even COVID is going to be able to stop that.
Yes, we're very thankful for the technology and the resilience of those persons who are responsible for providing services which are necessary, such as these, that they have not allowed, and many other service providers as well, that they've not allowed the necessary pauses to stop them from providing those services. Because unfortunately, even with a national pause, drug abuse is not going to stop. The social challenges that we have, the economic challenges that we have, they're not going to stop. Life must still continue, albeit in a different vein, but we have to adapt as necessary so that the organism, the country, the individual can all function at his or her optimum. I want to ask Betty a question, and I think you can also comment here, Dr. McLachlan, about those persons who are involved in providing services such as these very emotionally draining situations, because the social professions such as social work, medicine, and teaching are those where those who are involved are required to pour out of themselves. What facilities are available for such persons to ensure that they don't burn themselves out in the provision of care?
Okay, so I'll go first, and then Dr. Brian can go right after I do. What I try to do, and what we certainly have instituted for our counselor, is that she has somebody who provides oversight, and she checks in with this this person, trained person, a doctor as well. And so she checks in with this person. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of times people do not realize taken away how much you have to give of yourself when you're involved in professions and vocations such as these, because people are themselves in need of care. And when you're in need of care, that is the only thing that matters at that moment. It is not that you're really being selfish, but all you can see, all you have the capacity to do at that point in time is recognize that you need help. But in doing so, you don't have the space to consider somebody else. And quite often, you may be the third or the fourth person the counselor is seeing for the day. You do not know what has gone before, what situations that counselor has dealt with before. And so you're right. Sometimes we need to understand that we're dealing with persons first on both sides, both the counselor and the client. We're dealing with persons first. And as you say, if you have given of yourself, and you give, there's often not enough left sometimes for you at the end of the day. So I try and I encourage our counselors to get help and get care. If they need a break, this is not a problem, because you really cannot serve somebody when you yourself are empty. And even persons who are not counselors, who's not in the post of counselor, our community officers, our school officers, they often function as counselors as well. So they too have to be given that same kind of care that needs to be extended to them. They too have families. And sometimes even us as counselors, we too have family members who may be impacted by drug use, who may be impacted by some of these things that are going on. And so all of that is in the mix. But I think as trained counselors, you recognize when you are coming to that point and you take a step back. You take a step back and you seek help, or you take the help when it is offered to you. I know Dr. Brian probably will say the same thing, and he has it probably at a more acute level. He will seek his clients at a more acute level than at the NCSA. So perhaps his interventions are slightly different, Dr. Brian. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, burnout has become a little bit of a big topic at the moment. Obviously, not just persons in mental health, but also obviously for those now who are frontline workers in terms of COVID. And certainly for us, and one of the things we concern ourselves with is really, having to take on more things because of COVID. And COVID obviously has created quite a lot of anxiety and worry in patients, and therefore we were sometimes a little bit burdened before, and now there is even more. I've worked in places overseas where supervision was a formality. It had to happen. You have to have someone. You have to go. It's a little bit harder to do, I guess, in our society, which is a little bit smaller. And if I was looking for a supervisor, looking for someone to go to, then I'm always mindful that this is someone that I might be going to for counseling, but the next day I'm calling up, to have a discussion about a patient or whatever. So, but I have found certainly that, my colleagues they have sought out persons usually that they go to, as Betty was sort of saying, trusted individuals, if not therapists necessarily, but trusted individuals, persons who are, create a listening ear for them. And so for many of the staff that I work with, I know they sort of do that. I don't have to necessarily get into the details or know anything about it, but I'm happy that that is what they are in fact doing. And, again, there are lots of persons who are actually trained in counseling as well now. And so sometimes it is just a matter of being able to gripe, grumble, and vent, with regards to all that is happening. You're not expecting the person who you're talking to fix anything. It's nice to be able to have that, what I would call a safe space to be able to do that. There are GPs I know certainly who provide that service as well, and provide that service for people in mental health. So it is something that certainly others, can do as well, and offer that support. Because yes, mental health professionals, we get stressed and we are at risk for burnout as well.
So we didn't talk, Dr. McLachlan, more about things like hallucinations and those things. And the reason is that coming up later in the series, we're going to be having another psychiatrist in to discuss more of those acute psychiatric complaints. What is the one thing in our last few minutes that you want listeners to understand about drug abuse and misuse?
I think there's a tendency sometimes to not treat drug abuse as really an illness, okay? There's really a belief, it still exists, and I'll be frank, it exists sometimes amongst, health professionals, that drug abuse is about willpower. It's about persons saying no, and if they are consuming alcohol, they're consuming drugs, it's because they want to, that they are worthless people, that they just, they're wicked or whatever else, and all the other pejorative terms you can use. I think certainly we have to, again, be treating every client in the same sort of a way and assessing where they are, but recognizing that there are some certainly who willpower is not going to cut it. They need tools, they need help, they need separation from the drug for a period of time if necessary. And we have to treat them certainly as clients and as patients, and not just treat them as persons who are, again, willfully and purposely doing the wrong thing.
Okay, well, I hope that the family members have heard you and that they're not just thinking that this person isn't just stopping because they don't want to, but that there is an underlying, it's a medical problem as well. There are social aspects, yes, but there, it is a medical problem, like you just said. And it's not easy for the relatives. So we're not saying that you should be happy-go-lucky that, you know, somebody has a something that can be defined as a medical problem. No, there's some serious things that go on when persons are using drugs. So we're asking you to reach out and get that help. And we want to jump right back over to Betty and asking you to give us some numbers. You had mentioned that in this COVID experience, you have another number rather than your usual number that persons can reach you. So please give us some information that can be useful in reaching you.
Okay. So during this period of pause, you can reach us at 239-0584. That is 239-0584. And we'd be happy to provide any assistance that we can.
Oh, and the website. You had mentioned that if we want to take a look at some of the data, the reports that you put out, it was on your website. Can you tell us your website?
Yes, the website is ncsa.gov.bb. So ncsa.gov.bb. is a website. We're also on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, NCSA Barbados.
Yes, if you could see the smile on Betty's face as she mentioned that the NCSA is on top of all the social media platforms.
I smile because
that rivaled mine.
I'm sure my staff members probably saying she has to be reading that from somewhere because they know I'm a dinosaur. So I'm trying to.
Okay.
It's so funny. Yes. So I'm trying to keep up. Yes, but those are the places you can read a little bit more about us, see some more of what we are doing and what we will continue to be doing during this period of pause, and we will still be available to help in any way that we can.
So thank you so very much. This is the Better Health Radio Show. We're in our last 2 minutes, and we've had the pleasure to hear from Mrs. Betty Hunt. She's the manager over there at the NCSA on Pine Road about some of the things that the council does. We really didn't know a lot of what was provided by the council, so this has been informative for me as well. And my other guest was Dr. Brian McLachlan, somebody who always makes me smile and laugh, a consultant psychiatrist over there at the psychiatric hospital in Black Rock, and he was given some insight into some of the changes in behavior that you might see with some persons who might be involved in drugs. And they both discussed the avenues that were available for persons to reach out and get help. So don't stay home and suffer. Reach out and get that help. And of course, it would not be fair, or like we say, it would be remiss of me if I did not remind us to engage in that concept of the individual frontline worker. If we each thought of ourselves as a frontline worker, then we would behave in such a way to protect ourselves. And in so doing, we protect each other. So even although we are not dumbing down or nullifying or saying that the frontline workers, their work isn't important, of course it is. But if we think in that way, I firmly believe that we'll be able to do quite a bit. Remember to wash your hands carefully, soap and water, or 60% alcohol, wear your facial covering. We're talking about masks, it's not mandatory. Stay away from persons who are ill. And if you're out in public, make sure that you keep that 6 foot distance between you and another person. I'm sure we've all seen the videos of the lines in various places where there was little to no physical distancing. So we have to be always on our guard. This is a battle for us all. Everybody's involved. So let's all do our part. Thank you to my guests. And Gredston?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
It has
go
been
ahead.
Wonderful again. It has been wonderful again.
It always is.
Gredston is ready with his music.
Yes.
Thank you
and
all.
And I'm looking forward to joining you again next week. So this has been the Better Health Radio Show. Everyone, I wish you a pleasant evening.
All right, Doc, that's Dr. Renee Boyce. She's the host of the program, The Better Health Radio Show. And this evening she had as her guest, Mrs. Betty Hunt, and Dr. Brian McLachlan. So we want to thank both of them. And thanks for the kind words, Doc and Mrs. Hunt. And we will catch you another time. Dr. Boyce, next week, God's willing, you'll be around. You take care and have
Bye.
A good evening.
Have a good evening.
Thank you.
And have good evening to you.
All right. Thanks a lot. And we will catch you around the way in the future.